Hello, everyone. Welcome back to I See What You're Saying, the Disciplined Listening Podcast. I'm Michael Reddington, and today it is my pleasure to welcome our next guests, Aaron Selko and Kelly Johnson, the power duo behind Stratum 9, the company created specifically to guide individuals through their personalized journey of consistently achieving high performance through scientifically backed methods, programs, and processes. Hopefully many of you remember Aaron from a previous conversation where we dove into his book, The Ninth Stratum. Today, I'm super excited to talk with both Aaron and Kelly to get into even more depth, talk through their individual research experiences, how they applied in their lives, how they've helped other people apply in their lives, regardless of how individuals saw themselves at the start of the process. So today we're going to talk about so many different things, including the importance of getting our five daily wins, how to overcome the fallacy of thinking there's not enough time, some very specific techniques for that. Of course, the role that desire and effort play in any process, but specifically the process of consistently achieving high performance. And again, really focusing on how can we all adapt this to fit our individual lives and circumstances, whether we are parents, whether we are older, younger, have lots of responsibilities, fewer responsibilities, limitations, how we work through all of that in order to achieve our individual definitions of high performance. Really excited to share this conversation with everybody today. But before we do, we want to take a minute and thank our sponsors. First, we have HumanTel. Please head over to humantel.com and enter the code INQUASIVE25 for 25% off their self-paced, best-in-class online training to recognize shifts in facial expressions and nonverbal behavior that can let us know what other people are likely thinking and feeling at any moment in time and how we can use that to improve our relationships and our outcomes. I've done all of their training. I recommend it myself over at humantel.com. The code is INQUASIVE25. Please also head over to certifiedinterviewer.com. That's where you can learn more about the International Association of Interviewers. Do you and your team qualify? What are the individual and team-based benefits and opportunities that they offer? What about their online training and educational events, their in-person, regional, national, international training events, all that and more, as well as the information on the Certified Forensic Interviewer designation. What does it take to qualify? How do people prepare and pass the exam? And then once people earn the designation, what could it mean for them in their career as they maintain the designation over time? All that and more at certifiedinterviewer.com. And while you're online, please check out inquasive.com. That's where you can learn more about the customized programs our clients ask us to facilitate to teach their senior leadership teams, their sales teams, their HR teams, and beyond how to apply the strategic and ethical observation and persuasion skills necessary to encourage people to share sensitive information under vulnerable circumstances in the face of consequences across the scope of conversations we participate in every day. I can't thank you all for taking the time to join us week after week. Thank you all very much for continuing to be here. So now, without further ado, I introduce to you Aaron and Kelly. Good morning, Aaron and Kelly. It is always a pleasure to see you both. Thank you so much for joining us today. How are you?
What's going on, Michael? Thank you for having us back. Everything's awesome. It's the summertime.
Oh, it's great to see you both. Aaron, you look like you've been on a beach or two since the last time.
I might have been.
Kelly, thank you for joining us for this conversation and classing it up a little bit. I really appreciate that. Aaron joined us before. And I think the first conversation was right around the time your book was coming out, right? Like, I think it was right when the Ninth Stratum was hitting the streets. Yep. So now it's been out for a little while. You guys have been on the road. You've been doing a lot of work. You've been working with a lot of clients and also applying it to, well, continuing. You both were applying it already, but continuing to apply it in your personal lives as well. And so with this conversation, I'm really excited to dive into the application piece. And if people didn't watch the first conversation with Aaron, they should go back and watch it. But we'll bring them up to speed on what the Ninth Stratum is and the steps and the behaviors and all those kinds of things. But really would love to focus on the application. How do we use it? How do we get better? And with that, Kelly, honestly, as the brains behind the operation, I'd like to start with you first. So as we were talking off air a little bit, you were talking about how you applied it, gains and changes that you've seen in your life, especially as you look at it through your lens and your perspective. So I would be grateful if you could please walk us all through how you've applied this philosophy in your life and the improvements that you have seen as a result.
Absolutely. So thank you, by the way, for the acknowledgement of being the brains behind this operation. Much appreciated.
Very well.
I've known Aaron for about 13 years now. And all the time I've known him, he's always been one of those like 5 a.m. gym guys. You know that type?
Oh, I do know that type.
So I would say sometimes people are interested and intrigued by that type. And sometimes they're like turned off because they don't feel that they could be, mm-hmm. you know, that type. And there's a stigma that goes along with that. And when I first met him, I was an athlete in college and everything like that, but I was not the 5 a.m.er. And, you know, if I'm being honest, I was bartending. when he and I first met, I was bartending at the time. I was right out of college and I was more of a, you know, 3 a.m. or maybe sleep till like 11. And his lifestyle was interesting to me. And there was something that drew me to it as far as how it relates to performance, but I didn't understand how to take those first steps. So in some of my early years working with Aaron, I basically tried to understand what he was doing. And it did seem like too much of a big feat, like just waking up, you know, switching my routine that drastically seemed too challenging. And over the years, what I learned is that, and what the ninth stratum is about, is making small changes over time and being extremely consistent and disciplined in your routine. And it doesn't all have to happen overnight. So, you know, over some years, I did actually turn into one of those 5 a.m. gym people.
And we're still friends.
Thank you. Well, a lot has changed since then. And that period of my life, utilizing the 5 daily wins was a game changer because I was working long hours. You know, I was building a book of business and in full commission sales. And I didn't see myself as having time to do like extra things. And one of my favorite pieces was Aaron talks about this in his book about becoming a Renaissance man or woman. And it has a lot to do with relationship building, but this concept of becoming a Renaissance man or woman is about just broadening your horizons on what you learn and what you study. And it helps you connect with people more and relate to people on more topics. So that was an intriguing concept to me, but it goes back to the 5 daily wins because those 5 daily wins has you waking up on time, not hitting snooze. Then you go right into working out, doing something good for yourself physically, making sure you eat the right kind of breakfast that's going to give you the fuel you need, not looking at your phone or news, like distractions, things that might trigger you, like keeping yourself away from all that in these hours, and then personal development time. So reading something, learning something, and that idea of that Renaissance man or woman was so cool because that's the time that you can study things that aren't always necessarily for your exact type of business. So you can mix it up a little bit. You know, I learned about birds. I learned about plants. I mean, things that I never thought I'd be interested in. All of a sudden, I gained an interest and used some of that time and can relate with people on some weird topics that I wasn't expecting. So I guess, long story short, that those years of development were crucial for me. But then I got pregnant and that 5 a.m. thing went out the window. I slept so much. And then my daughter now is almost 3. And that routine just was rocked. I mean, it's been anyone listening who has had kids knows that, you know, the sleep can be really a hit or miss. Mine didn't sleep through the night till she was 2.5. So I'm just coming out the other side of getting sleep again. But staying with that concept of the 5 daily wins in the ninth stratum, I was able to give myself the space I needed because I couldn't beat myself up over it. That wasn't helping my, you know, me or anybody else. I had to just find different times to do it and still check off all my wins every day. So sometimes that meant, you know, going for what we call a strolly ride, which is running, mom running with the stroller. Sometimes it meant, you know, doing a 20-minute weightlifting thing after work, like wherever I could squeeze it in. So I'm proud to say I've regained my routine. And I think this concept of small changes over time, where I felt like I kind of got knocked back to start. I felt like I was on top. You know, I was ninth stratum. And then I got knocked back down to like, I went through all the stratums all over again. Redeveloped, reclaimed my routine.
And she can identify a red-breasted sparrow. I mean, like, so, you know, got that going for you.
Winning.
Yeah. All kinds of expertise being developed over here. Mm-hmm. I appreciate you sharing that. And I have a young son, you know, we've talked. So I very clearly remember the shattering of the routine, which honestly happened long before the kids are born. And then obviously into the young years and beyond. And then every family is different. But even as the kids grow, the routines change. Like the time I have to get up, the time I have to leave the house, the time I have to pick them up, all these different things that I'm doing, it's constantly changing. So of all the things I loved about what you shared, and there's so many, is applying it to like an average actual human being's life. For me, from the outside looking in, and I'll make fun of myself through Aaron here in just a second as well. I feel like oftentimes when we look at like becoming a high performer, it is somebody with this crazy background or story or experience, or they were elite at something somewhere. And now they're screaming at me through a video on my computer or my phone, giving me this routine that they follow. And I have no doubt that works extremely well for them. And I have no doubt that could work well for me too. But I am not them. My body is not physically capable of some of those things, giving a history of injury. Like I've got my own life and work and job and things to juggle and all that stuff. So I'm like, oh, cool story, bro. Moving on. But to be able to find a way that we can relate to it and find a way to tie it into our lives and just make it work for us. And it doesn't have to be the whole thing, but like step by step by step. And the part of making fun of myself is, Aaron, you were preaching the values of cold plunging to me a long time ago. And to echo Kelly's statement, my first reaction was, and I've used this example in seminars, by the way. My first reaction was, of course you do cold plunges. like that's the least surprising news I heard that day. But I viewed that through your Mr. High Potential. This is how you've lived your life, the discipline, the routine, all these things. And I'm kind of in and out of that. There's times I do better. There's times that I struggle. I've got a very good friend, one of my closest friends, training partners, who has struggled with weight and anxiety and these things his entire life. And I've known him 7 years probably, and probably around like Christmas time, give or take, this past year, I noticed that he was losing some pretty good weight. And so I sat down with him like, yo, dude, you look awesome. What's different? And he said, my wife bought me a cold plunge. Wow. He said, I'm doing it every morning. And it has made an enormous difference. Doing the cold plunge motivated him to change his diet. Changing his diet motivated him to exercise a little bit off the mat. So now, and he's a new dad. His daughter isn't, he's going to kill me if I'm wrong about this. I don't think she's 2 yet. I'm going to pay the price if she's 2 already. But doing the cold plunge was the change. And he's telling me about all the benefits, like energy and psychology and physical health and all these things. And I'm listening to him going, damn, I should really do that. And I probably should have listened to Aaron. So I bought one. And now it's become, if I'm not on the road, it's become a near daily routine for me. If something comes up with my son, or if it's pouring rain and thunderstorms outside, I'm probably not going to do it. But basically every day I'm doing it, and I've had the difference. So even Kelly, to your point, and Aaron, I'll cue you in here, how the ideas are presented to us matters. Who presented to us matters. How we align it with our self-image matters. So I'm not trying to run the Ironman, right? I'm not trying to be the local county 5K champion. It's just, what is the next step for me to be better? And Aaron, with the book and the research and everything that you did, how does that line up with your approach as you travel the country and work mostly, but I mean, successful people, but people who would fall in kind of that typical human being category, how do they find opportunities to follow Kelly's lead and align pieces of it into their routine?
Yeah, there's so many good nuggets there. I mean, you know, I love what you said. The reality is like, depending on how the message is delivered to you, is going to, you know, precipitate whether you do it or not, right? Or whether you have the desire to do it or not. And, you know, when I do things, I'm a big science guy, big psychology guy. I love, you know, I utilize what's called interoception. I have a very good sense of what's going on in my body, in my brain. And I use these things because I can sense that something's different. And it does something to me, like your friend said, it does a cold plunge in, you know, the energy level. Yeah. Yeah. Like, and then I go, okay, if I do the cold plunge and I have that energy, what more can I do in a day? Because I can utilize that extra bit of energy level. And then it goes into, well, I can, you know, pound through some brain work here. I can go on a 4-mile run. Like, it doesn't really matter, but you know, there's a usage to everything. And so you have to be able to step outside your comfort zone a lot of times and try these things out. You know, Kel's done it and you spoke about it perfectly, Kel. You know, being in that 5 daily wins, being a high performer, it's not a box. It's that you're not trapped in like a cage that you can only do specific things. It's a lifestyle, it's an ethos, and it does require discipline. But with that discipline comes consistency. And with consistency comes hard things aren't hard anymore, you know, and you're able to get up. And I like 5 a.m. because, you know, the bell goes off at my work at like 8, 9 o'clock. And so I want these precious hours to work on myself and develop myself because it's fun, you know? And so that's what the whole thing is. And I truly believe that anybody who has, you know, two things that we can't give people, I've said it before, you know, desire and effort. If you have desire and effort, anybody can be a high performer. Anybody can optimize their performance. And sometimes it comes with lifestyle. It changes. You know, I didn't always want to get up at 5 a.m. to go to the gym. It happened when we had our first child and my wife's like, you can't go to the gym after work anymore. You're not getting home like in enough time to help me. And I said, yeah, you know what? You're right. And I said, well, what if I get up before everybody's up and go? She's like, I don't care what you do. Just go get it done. Right. And that's when it started. And I was like 34. And I did it back in like high school too. Like when I was trying to make this all-star team and I just knew that one component that would get me on the team was speed. And so I began to wake up at 5 a.m. in the woods of Carbondale, Pennsylvania, and took an old tire, a chain, and two belts from a lawnmower, strapped them across my chest and ran 40-yard sprints before school. You know, like that was a necessity because I knew it was going to allow me to attain a goal I wanted. So, you know, a lot of the things we do to improve our performance really just come from the desire and then the effort we want to put forth to get to achieve that goal or that desire.
That's a great point. And I'm just picturing your neighbor wondering why his lawnmower wouldn't start the next morning, but that's a funny visual.
Eaten by a bear.
For me. Kelly, getting back to what you shared, as you talked about really kind of getting on board the first time and then having to do it again, I think there's two really important things to talk about there. It's really hard to do something once. In my opinion, it's a lot harder to break that routine, to lose all that progress, to look yourself in the mirror and start over. I mean, we've all done that. Injury, life changes, things happen, you know, whatever it is. So two questions. The first question is, when you were getting on board with this program the first time, and not just like the physical fitness and the health routine, but also you were building a book of sales. You were out pounding the pavement on your own, building relationships really out of thin air into what has become a tremendously successful career for you. So when you look at applying this the first time, What were the areas that caused you to really start believing in yourself and your potential through this process? Kind of like those early aha moments where you were like, oh, damn, I'm good.
There's one moment that comes to mind when you ask that. I remember just being completely on board with, this is the week that I'm going to wake up at 5 every day. And I had this idea laid out. I had the books I was going to read. I had the workouts I was going to do. You know, I was like, I prepared over the weekend. I did one of those Monday morning start type of things. And I just remember waking up, it's dark, and I went into my bathroom, closed the door, and I turned the lights on because my husband's still sleeping. And I'm like, I look around, I'm like, huh, now what do I do? Like, it was just like, okay, I'm up. I did it. And then I went and worked out. And then I was like, well, I guess I'll read a book. I was like hiding in my closet. It was still dark. You know, I'm reading a book and I was writing notes and I'm like, this is awful. Like, I feel terrible. I hate this. And then I woke up the next day, did it again. And every day I just kept doing it. And every day, like, there would be just those moments of like, all right, here I am. 5 a.m. Now what? And it took about 2 weeks for me to start feeling like that energy kick in. Like, I wake up and I'm like, yes, like, let's get after it. Cause it was grueling. It was a grind. It was not easy at first. Nothing about it came natural. You know, I even like working out, I've done that. So, and like eating healthy, I knew how to do that. So I would imagine that if you're starting at the very beginning of this, and maybe healthy eating and working out aren't, you know, natural yet, this all probably seems very daunting. And even just the waking up part, and like, that was daunting for me the first time around. But I just remember the day that it clicked, that I had the energy, I knew exactly what I was doing, and I felt on top of the world, and it sailed me through the rest of the day on a high that I never experienced before. And that was when I was like, oh, this is why he does that. I get it now. Do you remember that day, Aaron? Because I'm pretty sure I called you and said, I get it now.
Yes, you did.
I am all in on this 5 a.m., 5 daily win thing. Like, I feel it. And it actually changed the way that I showed up when I walked into the office. It changed the way that I approached clients and prospects. It changed everything. It changed the way that I interacted with my family, because I was just... When you accomplish small goals, you develop that, what Aaron calls an achievement mindset. And that mindset, it impacts everything. Like, there's nothing. And that's why this is a whole life approach. It's a lifestyle, as Aaron mentioned, because when you start doing these small things for yourself and you take that time for yourself, and you start achieving things, you start feeling that energy, you're able to better take care of everyone. Everyone you work with, everyone in your household. That was like the magic. I felt it. So when I lost it, I was at first very hard on myself, which is where I had to take that step back and realize this is a season of life. And the way I, you know, get healthy again after this season really matters, no longer just to me, but to my daughter. So that was really important from a mindset perspective, that I needed to give myself a little breathing room, a little space. It's okay that I can't get back to 5 right away. So I actually worked my way back. So at first I didn't have a wake up time, you know, in those early months. I just was like, whatever happens, whatever happens, happens today. And that is not the mindset that I developed. So that was frustrating, but I just had to be in that moment and be in that space and acknowledge that this is just a season. And then as that season carried on longer and longer, I was again frustrated. So I would start, you know, maybe a 7 a.m. alarm. And I was doing that thing that I used to do of roll, like hitting snooze, rolling out of bed, rushing through my morning just to get out the door. And I was like, this is everything that I don't want. This is everything that I fixed once already. So when I was able to start setting my alarm 15 minutes earlier, you know, and even getting back to like waking up at 6, that's kind of where I've been, you know, and now that I sleep again, as of February, my routine has been getting better and better. But waking up at 6 was fine too, because I was able to get in a 30-minute workout. I was able to have breakfast, you know, with my family, and I was able to either listen to a podcast or read something. So it was like small steps. I just went back to small steps, and it was a struggle though. I mean, there wasn't anything easy about it. I mean, there were a lot of life changes there, but I would say that once I acknowledged that it was a season and that I know I can make it back, that's when my mentality around it changed, and I was able to develop a new routine that isn't perfect in the way that I've experienced it, but I feel good again. I have energy back again. So I'm experiencing some of those same feelings that gets me to that achievement mindset again.
Yeah. Kelly, there's two things too, like, that are really important for anybody who's listening. You know, when you start the process, I always recommend do it with a friend. You know, I always say, like, we in the book, they talk about the PPAU, the peer-to-peer accountability unit. And so I've got these like performance cells all over the country where, you know, I get up at 4:45 or 5, I'm hitting like, okay, I'm up, you know, and you got all these other people who are on these like text messages or chats or team things, and they're all hitting me back, okay, we're up. So now you're part of a community. Now you know that it's not just you that's embracing the suck, it's everybody else, right? And then you start to do that, and it gets a lot, it's more fun, because maybe during the workout or after the workout, you're saying, I just crushed it, or man, I had a bad workout. And you've got this support group that's with you. But as Kelly, you were talking, you know, once you did it and you realized what it does, right? The whole thing about high performance, the whole thing about the ninth stratum is about raising awareness of your performance. So you rose your awareness. Is that what you're gonna right term? Can I say it like that? And you knew what it did. So when you lost it, you were like, wait a second, like huge difference, huge impact here. And so that's everything that we talk about with high performance. You know, in the basics of performance, in the basics of setting that achievement mindset and that performance mindset, I talk about a lot about, you know, how you get dressed in the morning. And people look at me going, are you out of your mind? Like, what do you mean you're okay, Mr. Performance guy is going to tell me how to, you know, what to wear. And listen, I was always a suit guy. So I always got a lot of flack for, like, you're always in a suit, you're always dressed up. I didn't do it for anybody else. I did it for me, because there's this thing called enclothed cognition, where it's a psychological phenomenon where the clothes you wear affect you both psychologically and physiologically, meaning, you know, you have more confidence, you feel better, you know, that whole term, when you look good, you feel good, when you feel good, you perform well. And then you've got the physiological component where, you know, they've done studies where they put groups together, and it was who could create the best sales deal. And they put one group in casual clothes, one group in sweatpants, another group in suits. And they took blood tests, and guess what? The people in the suits not only created the better deals, the higher margin deals in this exercise, but their testosterone levels went up compared to the other two groups. And and you look at that and you go, huh, okay, there's the science. I want the higher testosterone level. Therefore, I'm going to do that. That's what this is. I don't do it because, I think I'm something special. I do it for the edge, the competitive edge, and how it makes me feel. And so, you know, that's just one like little tactical application that we talk about when it comes to raising your performance.
And I love the fact that you're talking about the science. We're going to come back to that in one second. Kelly, again, thank you for walking us through all of that. And what I loved about that is, it steal your phrase of competitive advantage, you found a way to compete against yourself, so to speak. So it wasn't, I have to follow this model. If I'm not doing it perfectly, it doesn't count. It wasn't, look at all these other people and what they're doing. Like, one of the things that I'm really trying to work on with my young son right now, we were talking earlier, he's about to do his first competition this weekend, is we're not comparing, it's not about comparing ourselves to everyone else. It's, was I better today than I was yesterday? Did I perform better in this class than I did the previous class? Like, that's the hard part. People laugh. You're trying to get a six-year-old to understand that. I am. Definition of insanity, maybe, but I'm trying. But it can be just as hard for adults to try to do that, because it's so very easy to compare ourselves to these standards that we believe that we see or that we have to adhere to, social media lying to us all the time and all this other stuff. But what I love to hear is you found a way to make it work for you. So I can't get up at 5 a.m. I'll get up at 7. So if somebody listening doesn't have a young kid, they don't have to be to work at 9. And you're like, I ain't getting up at 5. Get up at 7. instead of 8:15, and start there, because use that gap in time that you have in that morning. And I can vouch, and I got this from you guys, is those 5 daily wins. 1 win makes you want 2. 2 mm-hmm. wins makes you want 3. And 3 wins makes you want more. So if your 1 win is I got up when I was supposed to, now what do I do? Well, I can wander around my dark house and figure it out as long as I don't wake up my son or kick the dog, right? For me, I found that, and I got this idea from my buddy Al Jones, but I had to put I use my phone for my alarm because, you know, why wouldn't I?
Yeah.
But I put it on the sink in my master bathroom. Mm-hmm. Because if it's next to my bed, you bet your ass I'm hitting snooze. Mm-hmm. But if I have to get up to go get it, I've already walked 5 steps.
Yeah.
So now I really have to take a punch in the pride to walk back to bed and get under the covers when I've walked in here to shut the phone off. So those little things make a big difference. Aaron, you talked about science.
Yeah.
For those that are watching the conversation, you got a copy of your book right behind us. And that book is layered with science. So although the Aaron and Kelly story about how we became super high potential and performing people would be fun to read, this is actually a scientific process that's broken down and supported with how and why this works and how to do it from a physical standpoint, like we've been talking about, psychological, business, cognitive, beyond. So Aaron, if you don't mind, what I would love to do is ask you to walk us through the role that science played in this. And if you could, maybe one or two more of the surprising things you learned researching the science behind how people can maximize their performance.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, you know, going through school, science was always my favorite subject. When I got into college, it was like sports medicine, physical therapy was my drive. And so and even as a young kid, you know, I wasn't the biggest kid, so I had to learn very fast how to build myself up through a magazine that I found in my parents' restaurant, which is called Muscle and Fitness. And I was like, you know, and I realized that, okay, there are things you can do to get better, to improve your performance. And so when I began to study the body and began to study human biology, I was like, wow, like all of these things matter. Like everything we do, the time we wake up, how we wake up, what we eat, when we eat, right? They all have an effect. And, you know, listen, not everybody needs to be a biologist to do this, but there are things you can do daily that will make you feel different in a positive way. And you go, okay, you know, I get it. Like we were just talking about the snooze button. I love the snooze button. I hate it. You know, and you guys, anybody can do this experiment. One day, wake up, get yourself out of bed at an earlier time than you normally do, and proceed throughout your day. The next day, hit the snooze button. Hit it 10 times. I don't care. Then wake up. You're going to feel different. And the science behind that is because your body is, when you get woken from sleep, your body tries to immediately put you back in it. And hitting the snooze button and going back into the darkness of sleep, your body begins to release those hormones, those chemicals again to put yourself into that deep rest. And then the snooze button goes off 13 minutes later. Or 9 minutes later. And mine's 9, by the way, because I like 9. That's what 9 minutes number. Later. and then all of a sudden you wake up and you feel groggy, like something's off. Like you're even more tired than you were when you woke up the first time. And so, you know, right there is a perfect example of why the snooze button is probably my least favorite thing in the world. And it, they really should do away with it on phones. But you know, there's some science for you. Eating, you know, like, you know, when we talk about focus, you know, there are ways to eat, depending on the bouts of work you need to do. If you're doing a lot of physical activity, okay, there's one way to eat throughout the day. If you know you've got to do high brain work or heavy bouts of mental activity, I want mental acuity. So therefore, the food that I ingest or maybe don't ingest, there's a reason for that, and I operate at that higher level because of that. So, you know, a lot of different things that come to play. I mean, Kel, I'm sure you have some fun ones too from the book.
One of my favorites, I grew up thinking and maybe being told at a younger age that I wasn't overly creative. Mm-hmm. So I did my art projects and all that, but I didn't have a high focus on it because I thought that wasn't where my skill set lies. So in part of the research and development on the ninth stratum, we have 45 performance-based skills that we've identified as skills that if anyone could improve in those skills, they will improve their performance. Hands down, they will improve their performance. And it's some of it's life, you know, because it's health related too. That's a piece we've been talking about a lot today, but is often forgotten when looking at performance if you're focused on career. But one of the skills is creative thinking. So coming from this mindset that maybe creativity wasn't my strong suit and that it wasn't something to pursue, I was fascinated by some of the science that goes into creative thinking and the environment that you can create in order to allow your brain more creative thinking, I guess, access. And the one that some of it, I guess, you hear a lot about companies like Google having, you know, specific spaces that are supposed to be designed for creativity, but it's very simple. And like clutter on your desk kills creativity, kills it, because it makes your brain like cluttered. So yeah. Even that's why like kind of blank white rooms are very common for like a think tank style room. And another one was about what's it called? Binaural beats, the music. Beats, yeah. And that's something that I started using after you've done the research on this, Aaron. I use it all the time. And like, you can't hear it at first. I don't know if you've ever experienced those playlists. You can hardly even tell they're on, but they get you so focused and in the zone. It's such a game changer for me. It's like a light switch. And people have come into my office and they'll say something to me, and then they might hear a tone and they'll go, "Is something on? Like, what is that?" And I've just been calling it my focus music. So when people come in now, they'll go, "Oh, it's focus time. Your focus music's on. I'll see you later."
Yeah.
But those tricks are really good.
Yeah. I listen to Slayer and I wonder why no one will knock on my office door.
That works too.
Yeah. Kel, another piece of that science that I love about creative thinking versus critical thinking, you know, left brain versus right brain, is, you know, whenever, like you said, you were always told that you weren't creative, you know, but what we learn and what we understand from psychology and the science of how we think in the brain is it's a preference, you know, so we prefer to be more critical with data than we do outside the box and creative, but you can learn how to either be more left brained or right brained by practicing things that take you out of your preference, right? Mm-hmm. And so we teach that a lot in the visionary thinking curriculum of the ninth stratum, where, you know, you to be a visionary, you know, people are like, "Oh, well, you know, I'm a critical thinker, and I'm not that visionary." It's like, no, you are. You just have to practice, and that's a big component of it.
Can we talk about how we practice this, you and I?
Yeah, go for it.
So I tend to be that critical thinker, and Aaron tends to be that visionary thinker, and that's why a lot of times we work really well together. But We're talking about ways to practice and how to kind of get out of your own way to go opposite. And cooking and baking are two ways to practice this. So for me, when I'm cooking, I like to have a recipe in front of me. I like to have, you know, I use measuring tools and I make sure I have all the right ingredients. And Aaron, can you describe your cooking methodology?
Let me see. I walk up to the fridge and the freezer. Go, okay, what we got in here? Some of this. All right, we'll just throw these in a pan. Let's do something with this. And there's no measuring. There's a lot of tasting, like a lot of add taste. And then,
You envision it.
I grew up in the restaurant business, so I do understand how to cook.
You see the dish on the plate before.
I envision the dish before I even start cooking it, by the way.
It's very artistic. It's an art form. And you learned to cook a little bit earlier in life than I did. I've been working on it, but I still measure things. But he told me one time that he doesn't measure water in a pot. He doesn't use, you know, he can just kind of throw it together and knows by texture and smell and taste and all these things. And I was like, huh. So I started practicing that. It was uncomfortable at first. I started not measuring things and just doing it more by feel. And then Aaron decided he was going to learn how to bake bread. And I told him that baking is a science. You need to measure this stuff. And he's like, yeah. What did your girl say about your first bread?
Oh my God, Dad, this is stratum 2 bread. Like,
and he may have been exaggerating.
Well, you can't use the stratum as a weapon, right? Number one.
His girls have definitely figured out how to use all the stratums as a weapon. But yeah, his hockey puck bread came out and he was like, okay, you're right. I need to measure. So then he had to start practicing measuring. And I think, where's your bread now?
You know, I'm still a six, still practicing.
But
testing it out once in a while.
What we learned through this cooking and baking experiment is that it's uncomfortable to do things that you're not used to and don't come naturally to you. And it's really important to lean into that discomfort and push your boundaries on things. And I know that cooking is like a silly example, but it applies to everything, everything in life. If you're not feeling discomfort, you're not growing. So anytime I feel a little uncomfortable, and this is another science piece, it's in one, I forget which chapter, but it talks about your gut instincts. And when you get those butterflies in your stomach, and that's just your brain telling you that it doesn't have data on this yet. So it makes you a little nervous. You get a little sweaty palms, like if you're about to give a speech or do something that's out of your comfort zone. It's just your brain telling you, I haven't collected data on this yet. So it's nothing to worry about. It's just this is a new experience. So when I learned that piece of science, that was really cool for me because I was always one who wanted the data and analytics to make decisions and was like kind of pushing my gut instincts aside. You got to marry both of them is what I learned. And there's science to back that up.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess we can stand a science like all day, but there's a fun one that I love. And a lot of people listening who might be in sales or maybe in negotiating, whatever it might be, there was, I always wondered about like, you know, you wake up on a Monday, Mike, and you're like, and it's Monday. When you get to Tuesday, you're like, it's only Tuesday. And then Wednesday hits and you get a little bit more like, okay, I'm over the hump, the color hump day, right? Thursday, you're a little more jazzed, feeling better. Friday's like, yeah, it's Friday. And the weekends are hitting. And then all of a sudden Sunday comes and you're getting a little bit down again. I always wondered about that. I always wondered like why I felt differently on specific days and if there was any science behind it. Guess what? Turns out there is. It was a peer-reviewed article in Plus One. They took metrics from Twitter, like all these tweets. Like, I can't remember how many, but it was either in the hundreds of millions or maybe, I think it was like 60 some million. And they broke it down by one part of the experiment was they broke it down by day. And they were trying to gauge the happiness level of individual based on the words that they were using. They found that there's this correlation to the days of the week when people are most happy and most agreeable. So if you're in sales, right, you know, go out and maybe bang on a door on a Monday or Tuesday, you're going to get a grumpy person on the other end of that phone or the other end of that that door. The probability is you're going to get somebody who's not like all there yet. But you get into Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, you know, you can begin to time your asks of these people. Time the ask of like, hey, can we get this contract done? Time the ask of, hey, can I get a meeting next week? Right? Because as the week progresses into that weekend, people's happiness level raises to a point where they're more agreeable and you're able to, you know, ask some things that you probably wouldn't want to ask them on a Monday or a Tuesday. And you can do this with your spouses too. So.
Thank you for challenging me to do a research study with my spouse. If I start sleeping on your couch, you'll know why.
Honey, but we really need that 75-inch TV.
Yes.
Yes.
See, we don't watch a lot of TV, probably no surprise. Well, I shouldn't say that we don't watch a lot of TV. With my son, obviously, we watch some, but I can probably tell you more about like kids' movies and cartoons than anything the average adult has been watching over the last couple of years. I love when somebody says, hey, do you remember this scene from Ted Lasso? No, never seen it.
Just remind me,
I was about to say I don't have time for that. And it was a comment I was going to make earlier when you both were talking about like this time thing. One of the notes I wrote down was like the fallacy of not having enough time.
Oh, love it.
Like, none of us have enough time, but we make the time for the things that we believe are important enough and will lead to outcomes that we want to experience. So I can say I don't have enough time to watch TV. I could create all kinds of time to watch TV if I really wanted to enough. And if the Red Sox are playing the Yankees, I probably will. But if it's for a TV show, a series or whatever, like I know I'm not just going to watch it for this 1 hour. I know that these producers know exactly how human psychology works. And within about 15 minutes, they're going to hook me into the next six seasons. And I don't want to do that. So I'm just going to avoid it altogether. Kelly, earlier you were talking about the 45 behaviors. So if I recall correctly, you've got this broken down into five categories of behaviors and the 45 different behaviors. And the 45 behaviors from reading the book, they're not meant to be overwhelming. Like you have to do all of these 45 things. But to your point from earlier, like if you got one, two, three, four, five, like if you can start there, they're all gateways to the next and the next and the next. And you start talking about using cooking. That's a great example. Using cooking, that's not like off base. That's it. Like I'm trying to develop a new skill set. And by the way, the lessons that I learned cooking apply directly to the lessons at work, the lessons in raising a family. It's one of the terms that I just learned talking with a psychologist or psychiatrist. I always screw that up last week was, Aaron, you might need to correct me on this. I think it's called functional fixedness, where people learn something and they say, okay, this thing I learned is only for the context that I learned it in.
Yeah.
It doesn't apply anywhere else. And that couldn't be any more wrong because the things that we learn can apply anywhere. Like one of my favorite examples, and it's again, making fun of myself to use is, so we've talked before, I trained jujitsu. I was getting stuck in side control and there's this escape that I know I should have been using, but every time I tried it, it just made my situation worse. So I'm pinned on the ground by somebody else laying kind of cross-eyed, chest on chest across me. When my son was an infant, I was changing his diaper and he was just figuring out how to roll over. And I watched my infant son roll over and literally step back. And I can't repeat the words that I actually said out loud at that moment. I don't want to offend anybody by accident. But my wife looked at me. She's like, what? Gabe just taught me how to escape side control. She's like, are you serious? I was like, yeah. I watched him roll. And for him to roll based on what his body was capable, he had to look before he went. His body followed his head and he got up on his shoulder to go. And I wasn't turning my head and I wasn't going over my shoulder. And as soon as I saw him do that, I was like, changing a kid's diaper. Now I know. Wow. My neighbor that I was very close with before he passed away in his 80s, he grew up as a foster child in Arizona. And he was one of the very early West Coast dirt track NASCAR drivers. And because they were racing out in the desert, they didn't really have a lot of tools. So when I would work on cars in the garage with him, I'd go looking for his toolbox for a tool and be like, what are you doing? Well, I'm looking for a 9/16. He'd start laughing and go, never use a tool for what it was invented for. Come over here. I'll show you how to do it. my dad grew up the grandson of a Model T mechanic who worked at a Ford assembly plant and always had Ford tools specifically for those cars. So my dad grew up always teaching my brother, now you got to use the right tool for the right job. They're both right. But the perspective that they have in their life experiences is what created that. And they both applied that perspective, you know, across their lives. Aaron, and we should point this out from a potential standpoint, you grew up working in a restaurant. Kelly, you started out as a bartender. Here we are now. Like, there's no such thing as a fixed path. So I'm pretty sure 15 minutes ago, Kelly, I was going to ask you a question before I had that little ADD rant right there. 45 behaviors. We don't need to do all 45 all the time. But if you had to pick what you thought were the couple of most important behaviors for how you either captured or recaptured this high potential momentum in your life, what would you say are the most important ones?
That's a good question. And yeah, we call them 45 performance-based skills. And that's because all of these can be learned. So that's the big thing about it. When we were going through the research and all of the studying that we've done on these skills, it had to be learned. It could not be something that's innate. And actually, some of the skills many people believe are innate, but they are learned behaviors, to your point. So I would say, if you're looking at the list and they are broken out, 45 does seem a little hefty. They are broken out into five categories, but there's a category that's called mentality. And the skills in that mentality section, I think, are some of the most critical, because if you can form your mindset first on, you know, being open-minded, having a strong work ethic, having perseverance, having resourcefulness, like these are mindset shifts of how you approach life. And I think some of those are, you know, drive is in there. So like drive, perseverance, resourcefulness, I think these are some of the most critical skills to start with. And many people already could be very strong in those skills, but they might be learned behaviors and they might be only applying them circumstantially, like you were mentioning. And I think that's another piece that we come across often, where if we're talking about composure, someone might be very composed at work and then they might come home and, you know, freak out, or vice versa, right? If you're working on composure, it's got to be across the board. You can't be one person here and one person there. That's inconsistent, and it actually makes you less trustworthy, which is another skill on the list, trustworthiness. So I would say that mentality section would be where I would advise people to start, because once they get some of those down, and they're willing to make some changes, then they can build on that and get through all the others.
It makes, sets everything else up. It makes complete sense.
Yeah.
And it is another one.
It is a journey. You know, like the one thing I think we talked about in the beginning of this podcast, Michael, was, you know, the average person coming in. I've said this before. You know, you get these people who are like, okay, I'm going to do it. I'm going to be a high performer. I'm going to start going to the gym 5 days a week. I go like this. I'm like, no. Go one day. Go one day, do one exercise, go home. Then we'll see if you can do it again. Because, you know, too many times, you know, we as humans want to accelerate our progress. And it's not always possible. And when you talk about operating at a higher level or optimizing your performance, that is, you are going to fail. Hands down, you are going to fail if you try to accelerate that process. The journey to optimized performance or high performance is, as I said, it's a lifestyle. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint. And it's something that you take in little bites, little pieces. You know, maybe one day, maybe 1 week or 1 month, you're working on your composure skill. Maybe you're working on your patience skill. Maybe you're exploring critical thinking, you know, and as you do this, you know, you get better at all things because you begin to develop these skills at a higher level and you're more aware of when you're uncomposed. And sometimes you can stop it and go, oh, I was about to blow off your handle there. I better dial it back a little bit, you know, so that it's so important. For everybody who's listening, everybody wants to really get to that next level. I'm sorry, it's not going to happen overnight. Certain things can improve over time and you'll notice them, but Kelly, you said it, consistency is the key to all of this. You know, just doing things over and over again. And there's, Mike, you said something about a time factor, like, yeah, I don't need time. I love when people say, I don't have enough time, but I can't read a book, I don't have time, I can't exercise, I don't have time. Yeah, you can. That's what the 5 a.m. thing is all about, right? And you don't need 3 hours, you can have 2 hours. You don't, if you can't have 2 hours, you have 1 hour. But during that 1 hour, you've got to get, you know, two things in. And if you really did the math, I'll have a calculator next to me somewhere, but, you know, and let's say you commit 2 hours a day to your personal performance. You're selfish with these hours. It's for your exercise, your personal development, your personal nutrition, waking up at the bell, whatever it might be, right? Multiply those 2 hours a day times 7 days a week. Then do it times 52 weeks in a year, right? There's like months of personal development time that you can have per year. Imagine that. Imagine what you can do with that. Imagine how you would look in the beginning of a year and how you would look at the end of a year, both physically, mentally, and emotionally, if you took those steps. That's what this is all about.
That's a great way to look at it. And I love bringing it back to just like the average human being. Like, we all have this capability to a degree. We just have to find a reason to want it. And once we find a reason to want it, and we don't have to be ninth stratum in all five categories and all 45 skills, we can pick the areas that are most important to us and try working our way to earn ninth stratum in any one of the categories is without a doubt going to raise the stratum levels in the others. Like, they might not make nine, but they're coming up with you. And that step-by-step process. And I love what you said about, it's not just start, but it's start reasonably. Another great friend of mine has been an athlete and a martial artist all his life at a high level, and life changed, work, all these other things. And he got to a point where he was unhappy with where he was at. He texted me last night, and he's unaware of you guys, by the way. He texted me last night that it was the 25th day in a row he had got up at 5 a.m. to work out with people in his neighborhood. Like, so now, Kelly, to your point, by the time you get to day 25, this is who you are. This is what you do. Like, this is now part of your self-image. So maybe one day, you know, my kid was up sick in the middle of the night and I'm not going to go work out today. Or maybe one day it's a thunderstorm, so I'm not going to get up and go run outside today, whatever it is. But now it's not going to knock me off that plane because this is who I am now. And this is just a day that for whatever reason, I can't do it. So now I feel like I have to do it tomorrow because I've been doing it. So Kelly, you talked about mentality and how important that is to develop. And for me as a father, that's like one of the most important things. I've got to figure out how to help my son develop, because I truly believe if you can do that, like, let's be honest, life sucks, right? So how you get through that depends a lot on your mentality. Mm-hmm. From your perspective, Kelly, with everything you've experienced as a human being, as a very successful professional woman, as a mother, as a wife, as somebody who's gone through this nine stratum protocol, it's ongoing. It never ends. We might fall up and down stratums. What would be your biggest advice to the average everyday human being for how to start on this path of realizing their version of consistent high performance?
I think my first piece of advice would be to identify what their goals are and what they're doing it for. Because as Aaron mentioned, you know, if you don't have the desire and you're not willing to put in the effort, then you're not going to reach your full potential. So you have to get real with yourself on what you want and why you want it. And once you get that squared away, for me, after having Lindy, it was, I wanted to be strong because I wanted to be the kind of mom that can outpace my kid's energy level so that I can show her how much fun we can have together, right? Like that. But it shifted. My reasons shifted. But once I kind of got that squared away, I was able to then apply that by making those small, consistent changes. And they have to change over time. My workouts started as 20 minutes, like HIIT classes, because that's all I could squeeze in. And I plateaued, you know, I got stale after doing that for a year, and I wasn't seeing my strength improve. So actually just maybe a few months ago, I switched to heavier weightlifting. Man, like what a dynamic change that was. I was faster. I mean, you know, I'm chasing a three-year-old, but still.
But you're not losing.
I'm not losing now. So I was faster. I was stronger. I am. And it was such a noticeable difference. But those small tweaks and then seeing improvement is so motivating. So I would just say, you know, figure out what you want and why you want it. And if it's, you know, if it's a physical purpose that you're after, daily, I mean, consistency is so key, right? And then nutrition plays a huge part in that because it's all about energy. Maybe you want to improve your performance at work. That time and dedication to yourself every morning is imperative to how you're showing up every day and the energy and that you're bringing to your teammates and how you treat people. You know, like, so maybe it's studying, you know, maybe you want a management position, you want to be a leader, like whatever it is you want, that's what you got to figure out so that you can build a tiny mini program that you're going to achieve every day. And then when you start plateauing, tweak it.
Love it. And through the seasons of life, it's not going to be the same every day, every week, every month, every year. I'm sure this is, I don't have all 45 of your performance-based skills memorized yet. I apologize, but I'm sure adaptability is in there and going, understanding that things are changing around me and that's okay. Mm-hmm. I can change with it. Aaron, as we start pushing time here a little bit on our conversation, I'd like to float the same question to you. This has been something you've embraced for many years. You didn't just accept it as this is the Aaron story and made me who I am, so everybody else should be me. You went and found the science. And the science changed how you look at it and how you do it and how you approach it. So you didn't go out to find science that said, hey, I'm doing it right. You went out to find the science that says, what's the right way to do it? And then made the adaptations based on what you found and then packaged for everybody. So I'd love to ask you the same question. Based on your experience and your research and everything that's gone into what you do, for people that are just looking, you know, you're right, I got to start. I heard Kelly, I heard Aaron, I got to do something. One foot in front of the other, how do they start?
Yeah, I think it's really like an introspective type of conversation you have to have with yourself as to where do I need to start? You know, a lot of times when I'll ask a general statement, if we're doing like a speaking engagement or something, I'll say, if I had to ask you to improve your performance today, where would you begin? And a lot of people go, I have no idea where to begin. And that starting point is very hard to understand. It's hard to figure out. One thing I always like to say is, you know, we know what we're good at. We know what we're confident in. We know what skills we exude. But how many times do we take a look at the ones that we're neglecting or that we're failing in? There's a good starting point. There's a good starting point, right? If you look at, if you take the 45 performance-based skills and you look at them all and go, yeah, I have no patience. Okay, well, there are practices out there. There are ways you can improve that. And so that's a good place to start. You can also look at, you know, another piece of advice that is, you know, what are your passions in life? You know, maybe are you neglecting a passion or have you not discovered it yet because you're so overly focused on your career, your company, the people you manage, and you're always gauging their performance? When's the last time you looked at yours and said, What am I good at? What am I passionate about? And when I find that, how do I begin optimizing my performance and the things that are going to make me better at my passion? You know, so it's a little bit less of a, you know, starting point answer for you, Michael, but it is something that if you look deeply in yourself and you have a conversation with yourself, you can uncover some cool things that you might be neglecting, and there's your starting point. Go there.
I love it. And just start. I've had many conversations about writing. Neither one of us were trained writers, skilled writers, went to school to be writers, any of that, right? So we've had so many of those conversations.
When I'll trade you the first manuscript of my book for the first manuscript of your book. I bet you mine's worse.
they're both nothing like what the final product turned out to be. Thankfully, I had to get coached on writing short articles before I could get anywhere near writing a book. And I used to get hung up sometimes, honestly, for an hour on the opening line.
Yeah.
Because I felt like I couldn't write the article until I knew what the opening line was. And then finally, through pain and agony and people telling me to do this and me refusing to listen, I finally just started typing sentences that were in my brain. And I could just space them out on a Word document. And some of those sentences would get deleted and some would turn into paragraphs, and the paragraphs might get changed in order, and then bullet points might get out, and then the title would be there. So even just saying, well, I got to write this article, can't think of the title I really want to call it. I can't think of the opening line, but the publication has told me that the deadline is tomorrow. And God invented deadlines so I can slide right underneath them. And this is my time. So now I have to do it. Just putting those thoughts down eventually led to that. So just start, do something. And I know we've thrown the word Ninth Stratum around, and we'll put links to the book and the website and everything. And we've talked about the science, but we should say that the Ninth Stratum, my words, not yours, create like a ladder and escalator, pick your analogy. So through honest introspection and honestly gathering outside data from those around us, we can start saying, okay, so in these five categories, where are we? Level one, we got a lot of work to do. We're just getting started. Level nine, we haven't mastered. Okay, well, there's an argument to, are any of us level nine at anything? Doesn't matter. But now we can start setting goals for, okay, well, to be a level two or three, this is all I got to do.
Yeah.
And then once I do that, honestly, by the time I'm level three, I'm probably more than halfway to seven, because I've already got the building blocks in place and I'm going to grow exponentially. So for the people who take the time to read the book, it's not the Aaron and Kelly story. It is this is the science, this is the process, these are the behaviors, these are the steps. And you just mentioned developing patience. This is what to do to develop patience. Like, we all have to apply it to our own lives and experiences, but it's there. It's in the book, and it's in the online programs you guys have, and it's in the engagements that you do with your clients, and it's in all of that. So it's not just a, hey, know these things and think about these things. To give Kelly credit for being the one recipe following person in the conversation, it's a recipe for how to improve and reach our potential in all of these areas.
Couldn't have said it better.
So we're going to end on that note. You guys are awesome. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for sharing your time and your wisdom. It's always great to see you. Oh, by the way, I do need to thank you for telling me that my brain wants to go back to sleep when my alarm goes off. Because I do feel like, I've been saying this for years, I like getting up. Like, I like being up, but I hate getting. Like, the physical act of getting out of bed is like the hardest part of my day. So I know that my brain is trying to trick me again.
It is. Shake the wake. I always say shake the wake and get that blood going, and you'll be up and ready to go.
Where can people learn more about the Both of You? Where can they connect with the Both of You? And where can they learn more about and from the Ninth Stratum?
Yeah, the book's on Amazon, and LinkedIn is always a good starting point to connect with us. And hey, those five daily wins, we're almost finished. We're in like our beta version of an app that not only allows you to track the wins, but you can, see how streaky you get. You can correlate those wins with your goals. So it's fun. It's something that's a little extra accountability for anybody who's looking for it.
Awesome. And Kelly, for the listeners who are like, Aaron sounds cool, but I really would rather talk to Kelly. How do people get a hold of you? How do they connect and continue to learn from you as well?
LinkedIn is perfect. Kelly Johnson on LinkedIn.
Perfect. And I'll have all
Kelly's
those.
Kelly's way cooler than me, by the way.
Is humility one of the 45 behaviors?
It is. And it's one he's been working on. Can you tell?
Struggling through, I imagine. It is great to see you both. It's been so hard not making the jokes as we've gone through this conversation.
But that's great.
It's been amazing getting to know you both, learning from you both, working through you both. You're doing great work. You're impacting and changing lives. And Kelly, to your point, not just the lives of the individuals, but their families and their coworkers and the people around them, their circle of influence. So thank you both so much. Stay safe. Take care of each other. And we will see each other again soon. I know it.
Thank you, Michael.
Sounds great. Thank you so much.
Aaron and Kelly, thank you so much for another amazing conversation. I really appreciate you taking the time to be here, but really, I appreciate you sharing so much of your individual stories and experiences and background and allowing all of us to read into that so we can find our own motivation, our own common ground, and use that as we start our own individual journeys to achieving high performance in our lives. I can't thank you enough for all that you shared today. Thank you. And there were so many things that really are worth touching on before we go, but to just pick a few, I really like the idea of creating the context or the environment to be successful. If we understand the goals we want to achieve and what it takes to get there, creating the environment to make that easier for us is such a great place to start. I love that. And I absolutely love the idea that butterflies really equal no data yet. We get the butterflies, we get nervous because we don't have the data yet. We don't know what happens next. But the more we accumulate these experiences and the more we subject ourselves to risk, we can get these butterflies to go away because we've been there, we've done that, we've been in similar situations, we've had the data. I also love the idea that consistency and small steps are very important in order to keep going 1% better every day, as they say. And how important relationships really play a role in this as well. The network we build, the relationships, whether it's peer accountability, others that we can rely on, others that we can help along the way, all very important. So thank you so much. And another huge thank you to everybody who continues to take the time to listen to these conversations every week. We really appreciate you being here, sharing your time with us. And I hope you're taking notes, you're saving the conversation, and you're applying these tips to your lives as well. So before we go, let's thank our sponsors one more time. Humantel, please head over to humantel.com and enter the code INQUASIVE25 for 25% off their best-in-class online self-paced training. To begin recognizing when people's facial expressions and nonverbal communication are changing and what that likely means they're thinking and feeling at that moment in time. Recognizing that in the context of the situation helps us strengthen our relationships and achieve stronger outcomes. Check it out, humantel.com. Please also, for the professional interviewers, head over to certifiedinterviewer.com. That's where you can learn more about the International Association of Interviewers, their membership opportunities, benefits, how you can participate, add value to the organization, what you can find for their online education resources, their in-person educational events around the world, so much more. Not to mention the Certified Forensic Interviewer designation. What does it take to qualify? How do you sit for and pass the exam? How do you maintain the credentials? And then, of course, what does that really mean for you and what can it do for your career moving forward? All those questions and so much more answered over at certifiedinterviewer.com. And please, while you're online, head over to inquasive.com. That's where you can learn more about the customized programs our clients ask us to teach their senior leaders, sales teams, HR teams, and more, so we can help them apply the strategic and ethical observation and persuasion skills necessary to obtain the everyday confessions that improve relationships, strengthen outcomes, reduce stress day in and day out in the spectrum of their high impact conversations. Again, I can't thank you all enough for being here. Thank you so much. Please, before you go, like the show, share the show, subscribe to the show, send us your feedback. What would you like to hear more or less of? We'd love to hear it. We'd love to do it for you. Thank you all so much for being here. Stay safe, take care of each other, and we'll see you next time.